You heard it here first. Don't sit Bowman down. He is the future. We're going to be just fine with him in there. And targeting, what is it? We don't know.
Can we get consistency?
Because
if you hit a quarterback, automatic.
Yeah, if you spear a quarterback, automatic. If you decapitate a receiver, you should be in the clear. Fine. Wait, hello, mic check. Is this thing on? What is going on, Ramblin' Raiders listeners, Red Raider Nation, everybody tuning in for tonight's podcast? Thank you for joining us. This is episode 62, the same old song and dance. You know, this is premium. You know, Ramblin' Raiders, we bring you premium Texas Tech content with a laugh, the best that we can. Let me go ahead and bring in my two co-hosts tonight. First and foremost, I have Nick, the goat of unplugging, Thompson. Nick, what's up, man? I heard you gave up Snapchat and you're just AI free.
Oh, I was wondering what you meant by unplugging, but yeah, I appreciate that. That nickname was a good one this time, Chef. I mean, shoot, should I be using that word?
You know what? We can have a little crossover if you want. I'll just tell you this. I will respond to either Jackson or the Chef.
Will you be cooking up the hottest of hot takes this episode, Chef?
I'm going to try my best. It's hard to outdo our hot take specialist, which we'll bring in right now. Also, but I'm a little disappointed, Nick. I mean, the unplugging reference, you know, do you just like after we do a Matador Motivational, does it just go in one ear, out the other?
That would be part of a Matador Motivational.
We did it like 2 weeks ago.
I beat the AI, man. I'm not plugged into my AI anymore.
That's
true. I got rid of Snapchat for a week, you know, see what happens.
So you took it by heart, but then you completely forgot about it.
Yes.
Okay, next we have, as we were saying, the hot take specialist. I tried to cook him up on Laney's locks. He's here to redeem himself after that week of ups and downs gambling. We have Lane. I just capped out Griffon.
But my capper did hit, I will say.
Dude, you pushed it to the limits and then you came right back.
And it came and it worked out for me.
You are capper, Nick.
But, well, I don't know about that. But Nick, I have a question for you. How do you plan to stay in tune with what's going on in Texas Tech and how you plan to talk to the fans?
Well, I don't have the fans on my Snapchat. I only deleted Snapchat. I still have Twitter and Instagram, and that addiction is still as real as ever. But Snapchat's gone for the week.
Nick, one step at a time. It's baby steps, dude. Take away Snapchat, you're on the road to success. We can't say the same, however, after seeing what happened in Manhattan, the Little Apple. And, you know, we're going to get into that content. We have a lot of good info on the recap, as well as looking forward to the game in Ames against Iowa State. Coming off that big, well, I don't even know if you can really call it an upset because the Big 12 is so wide open. Coming off that victory against Oklahoma, we're going to get to that in a minute. Before we do, let's really quickly run through our social media as we always do, guys. If you haven't followed us already, hit us up on Instagram at Ramblin' Raiders. We're very active there. Also on Twitter at Ramblin' Raiders. And then our Facebook page is Ramblin' Raiders Podcast. We are always putting up new things about the pod, about our website, about merchandise, our write-ups, which we've slipped a little bit on lately. But we're, you know, bringing anything new that we do on the podcast, we're bringing to you on those social media sites. So check us out there. And then also, if you haven't already, it means a lot to us, guys, when you rate, review, and subscribe, whether that's on Spotify or Apple Pod, wherever you can get it done. Let us know how we're doing with a rating and a review. And then, you know, if you like what you're listening to, go ahead and hit that subscribe button for us. We're trying to grow this thing for y'all and, you know, bring some parties later on down the road, a little tailgate action. If we can get big and get some more advertisers in here, which we'll get to that next week. We got exciting news on that front. Laney's Locks, I want to plug it really quick. Speaking of Nick being unplugged, we're going to plug in Laney's Locks right here.
There you go.
Lane, how'd that first week? The first episode, it's still not out on Apple Pod, but it's coming soon. I think it was a pretty good app, and I'm excited to do a lot more.
It was a solid app of betting, good weekend for people to really hit and fade at times to our locks because we had an up and down weekend.
Yeah,
the chef specials were pretty solid. Well.
Yeah, y'all went 3-1 this week on that.
Although Jackson,
that's your boy,
record a couple of his misses, but
no, it was just the Twirlet. The chef special on the pod was 4 bets, and 3 of them hit. So if you're a loyal chef special follower, Your bank account's in the green right now. Surplus of cash.
So, yeah, it was a good weekend, and we look forward to bringing you more.
Remember, those are going to be released on Thursdays and Fridays. You can also follow Laney's Locks. We'll shout those out on his podcast, but he has an Instagram and Twitter page. I think Instagram's Laney's Locks. It's Laney's underscore locks 15, and then Twitter is just at Laney's Locks. So go check those out if you haven't already. Nick, my man, what is up with the website and our merch right now?
Jackson, my boy. First, I'll start off with a little good news.
Okay, I like where this is going.
10%.
Oh, yeah.
Of all of our sales.
I thought you were going to throw a curveball at us.
Are going to charity, guys. If you want to support indirectly a charity, last month we did St. Jude's. Two months ago we did St. Jude's. This month we donated.
September was Laura to Laura victims.
Yeah, to Laura victims. Hurricane Laura. Unfortunately, there's another tropical depression forming, and it looks like it's going straight to the same part of, you know, Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Are you sure it's not over Lubbock, Texas?
It could be Hurricane Wells. Yeah. but 10% of all sales are going to charity, guys. Go get your hot takes with Laney Cakes t-shirts. We got the long sleeves out for you guys because fall is here. Winter is coming, as Jon Snow says. And, you know, you want to go check those out on our website, RamblinRaiders.com. We also have our regular Ramblin' Raiders merch with the logo on it. You can get your game day polos, your tanks if you're going somewhere tropical this winter, t-shirts, hats, socks, whatever you want. We even have shorts.
That's right. We got it all. So be sure to go to RamblinRaiders.com. You can listen to our content there on both the Laney Cakes podcast, Laney's Locks, and Ramblin' Raiders podcast. You can read our write-ups, check out our shop, and just see generally what, you know, the guys are up to as we continue to bring you guys, you know, content each and every week. So check out Ramblin' Raiders. With that, we got our website going. We're ready to move on. Our look around campus is up next. I'll start us off with the women's soccer team. They drew against Oklahoma. It's not, you know, the result they wanted, but it was a really gutsy performance. Charlotte Teeter had a big game, scoring two goals. First two goals in conference play. Actually, I guess they've only done conference play. So first two goals of the season, scoring off a PK and off a header that was delivered from Kristen Davis on a cross in the 88th minute. So they were down. They needed one in the worst way. And Charlotte Teeter was there to deliver for them. You know, Coach Stone was on record saying, again, that it's not the result they were hoping for, but just promising signs of improvement. And they're going to keep chopping wood and get after it. Their next game is against West Virginia at 7:15 this Friday, October 9th. And, you know, it's at the John Walker Soccer, at the John Walker Soccer Complex. So get out there and support the Red Raider soccer team if you can. They're looking to get their first dub after, you know, one loss and two draws.
Yeah, it's been a real teeter-totter of a season thus far.
Right you are.
Let's move on to men's golf. Lane is our correspondent on the golf team, even though
really is.
His golf game struggles at times.
Better than you two's, I would say.
Debatable. Right. Nick's for sure.
Definitely mine. I suck. Yeah. I suck at golf.
Anyways, the Texas Tech men's golf team had a big day Sunday where they dominated Iowa State 5-1 in the Big 12 match play tournament on Sunday. That was their last round of the three day contest at the Houston Oaks. The Red Raiders finished 1-2-1 record that weekend. So not a great
weekend,
but they were the reigning champs of that tournament, so they couldn't.
And they beat the team we care about the most, Iowa
State.
That's
right. They beat the team, and they rolled on their last day there. So that was big. Their season will continue at the Murdo Collegiate starting October 16th in Carlton, Texas.
Nice. And really quick, I'll just plug this in, Lane. We're making fun of each other's golf game, but the other night we played over at a course locally by our house, and we, you know, tried to hit that Twilight special to save ourselves a little money.
Oh, yeah.
We got to hole 10 and 11. It was, you know, we were golfing with my buddy. I'll give him a shout out, Mark Brezina. Golfing, it got pitch black on us. And what do we do for a scramble? And in the dark, just hitting blind.
Double pars.
Two pars. Back-to-back pars.
I carried us on that last hole.
I carried us on that first hole. I will say this. I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign that we play better in the dark whenever we can act, like, instead of whenever we can actually see the ball.
Yeah, I guess we need to invest in some night golf, some of those glow-in-the-dark balls.
Hey, I'm all about it. Ramblin' Raiders night golf trip coming soon. With all that being said, our last item on the look around campus, Our boy Nikas has the beat on that. Speaking of beating down Iowa State, Nick.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened with women's volleyball?
It's been an Iowa State kind of week, and as we go into this Iowa State game in Ames, but volleyball played Iowa State in Ames. They were just there. They actually split the series this weekend, losing the first match 3-1, and then they beat the second match. They pulled out a victory 3-2 against number 13 Iowa State. So good job for the girls there. And, you know, it was our first road win against a ranked opponent since September of 2018 against number 19 Baylor. Caitlin Duggan and Brooke Canoss, both of whom are leading the team in kills. They led the team in kills this weekend. Sam Sanders and Alex Kirby both had double-doubles. Didn't even know you could do that in volleyball.
Wow.
And Kirby had 52 assists along with a career-high 19 digs this weekend. Good job, girls. We're excited for you. Next matchup is against TCU and Fort Worth.
Wow. So you could say that most teams cannot get an easy victory against the Red Raiders women's volleyball team, huh?
Sure. Sure.
The Horned Frogs cannot expect an easy win against Texas Tech this next weekend.
No, they cannot. We're poised to open up a can of cannot.
There we go.
Canossing a lot of teams in the Big 12 this year.
That's
huh?
right. They cannot expect an easy win. Congrats to our, you know, volleyball team. Sounds like they are stepping up and, you know, making moves, getting a win against a ranked team.
Yeah.
Anytime you can do that, especially on the road, that's a big deal. So all terrible puns aside, since, you know, that's what we thrive on this podcast, you know, we're really proud of all these teams, you know, men's golf, women's volleyball, and women's soccer representing Texas Tech at the highest level. Keep it up, guys and gals. And, you know, we look forward to bringing y'all information on the Look Around Campus. You know, we like talking about the Look Around Campus because then we don't have to get into the football recaps.
Yeah, it delays it
in
for
the
sure.
previews. It delays it a little bit, but the time has come. There is no more waiting. The moment is now. Let's go ahead and dive right into our main body content for this week. The first off, and, you know, unfortunately, Kansas State recap. So, you know, for this recap, I know last week we said, or at least I said, that I don't believe it can get worse than what happened against UT, and I still believe I was right there. You know, things didn't get worse, but they sure as hell didn't get much better against Kansas State, a team that was – I really do think these teams were somewhat evenly matched. I mean, their run game really hurt us there at the end and well, really throughout the entirety of the game. But we just didn't play up to our potential, to the level that we've seen these guys compete in the past. They kept it close and somehow, as we always do, found a way to lose it late in this game after going ahead in the fourth quarter. Let me start with y'all, and then I'll get into my bit on this. Instant reaction, man. Besides the fact that K-State has some dirty birdies on their defensive side of the ball.
Number 7.
Nick, yo, dude, that guy's a liability in the secondary. You know, he's either – I know they're hyped up on him because he's a freshman. They're going to see him for 3 more years, but they're not going to be seeing him on the field. He's either going to be ejected from the game on the sidelines or in a neck brace from hurting himself on a
yeah. –
just lowering his head. I mean, guys, yeah. he's a – that was a joke that we didn't get – well, not even him, their secondary, that we didn't get a
couple other players as well that
yeah,
probably should be tossed.
A targeting call, especially, you know, after Rico's. But, Nick, I'll start with you, dude.
Sure.
What's just your instant reaction, man, after a tough beatdown and just a tough loss in Manhattan?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're just not there yet. Kansas State, you know, they were the better team on Saturday. They showed up and they showed it. We played well. I think, you know, we did pretty decent for having a backup quarterback in there most of the time. Collinby did do pretty decent, but it just wasn't enough to get a road victory. You know, I'm happy that we're playing in games. We're not getting blown out. We shouldn't be blown out by Kansas State, but. Yeah. You know, they were just the better team on Saturday. We made mistakes. We didn't execute. It was just another loss. Getting kind of used to it.
Took the words right out of my mouth. Lane, what do you think?
Instant reaction is just we lost in the trenches big time, both sides of the ball. Defensive yeah. line, they ran all over. I mean, they ran commandingly over us. And then our offensive line was just awful. Pressured Columbia. We couldn't get the run game going in the first half at all.
Early, yeah.
And, you know, in the second half until late, we barely got it going.
They finally figured out at least the run, but then we were still getting pressured on
stupid penalties they made, you know, cost us the game. And then it's a couple bad coaching decisions late for me that were really bad. But other than that, I mean.
Same old story,
same
right?
Same old story, I guess.
Title of this episode, man. Different day, same old story, same old song and dance, however you want to look at it.
Will Matt Wells ever be able to win a close game?
We do not know and are yet to find out, man. We see that ceases to be known. My instant reaction just, I mean, Nick pretty much said it for me. The Texas Tech didn't execute, man. I mean, for me, you know, my three keys to victory on last week's podcast were win the battle on the line of scrimmage.
Nope.
Win the special teams battle. And then, you know, with two teams that are so evenly matched, be the more polished, refined, clean team. Don't make as many mistakes and be the team that plays more solid. We couldn't capitalize on any of those three victories. We played sloppy and made more mistakes. Our special teams, as we're about to get to in a second, just the biggest risk factor on this team. I think the worst part of our team right now is our special teams. And then on top of that, we did not win the line of scrimmage. So we kind of called it. We saw it coming, and we didn't execute. Big plays also really hurt us in this game. I mean, when you have a shot at winning and you're up at one point not late, but midway through the fourth quarter, just big plays that we could not afford, absolutely were crushing to our morale in this one. And then I believe in, you know, me personally, other people could have a different opinion, but to me, it's an equal share of the blame. I put it some on the coaching, and I put some on personnel, man. I mean, I think that Matt Wells and co, they have to improve, they have to adapt, and that they made mistakes in this game, but so did our players. You know, I'm going to hold the players accountable in this episode, because at some point, you can coach them, you can put them in the right place, you can tell them exactly what to do. Dude's got to execute. I'm sorry, that's just bottom line. And there were moments late in this game when we simply, our personnel did not execute, and that's a big red flag to me. If we're going to, you know, break this losing culture and get to a place of winning close games, coaching's got to be better, players got to execute. So let's talk about the negatives first. Guys, I mean, I just pretty much hit it as hard as I could. Special teams, dude. I mean, I mean, what, first of all, I guess, what's going on with Trey Wolf? Not even close to the same kicker we saw last year.
Atrocious.
And then also, what's our special teams coach's name again? Y'all were saying
Mark Tomerdahl.
Tomerdahl, that's it. If I have to see us get one more punt blocked, I expect the conversation between Matt Wells and Coach Tomerdahl to go something like this.
You're fired!
Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
You're fired!
I think that Matt Wells should have that conversation maybe this week and just let him go.
Well, it just, on the blocked punt, is the coaching is so bad there. One, I mean, the setup, you know, the punt block setup they have, or the punt, you know, protecting the punter is terrible.
Guys, yeah.
The execution is terrible. The guy just sits on his heels and lets, you know, guys run at him. I mean, it's just inexcusable.
Well, so in this game, we had a 13-point swing from special teams because we missed two field goals, and then they, you can argue, essentially got their first touchdown off the blocked punt because they scored on the next play. Our boy Harry Trotter, that little wizard himself, man, was zooming around out there. He scored on the next play, so that's a 13-point swing. And I was talking to Lane about this earlier after we were watching the game this morning, and then also, you know, we were watching some of the Iowa State game too. But you got to think about this hypothetically. You can. There's an argument to be made for this. If Trey Wolf is 3-for-3, if Trey Wolf is 3-for-3 instead of 0-3, there is a very fair chance, good chance, I would even say, that we're 2-0 in the Big 12 right now. I mean, that's special teams costing us games.
Yeah, no, two games with a block punt in a row, three field goals going back to the Texas game. They're just letting us down in these important games. And there have been some good plays, like they stopped the fake field goal on the first drive against Kansas State.
That was ballsy.
What did that lead to? Yeah. Our block punt. So
that was ballsy by Klein.
You know, it's topsy turvy. They're not consistent.
They're not consistent at all. And I agree with Jackson. I think if he's 3-for-3, we're definitely put in a much better chance of winning these games.
I think we're at least 1-0.
I'm not going to say it's going to change the outcome just because, you know, it's the butterfly. You don't know what happens after, and you know,
I'd say our chances are very
high.
But
I agree. I think the chances are very high. But I mean, just inconsistent. It's kind of like our whole team, though. Our whole team's inconsistent.
It's just frustrating that
it's poor coaching to me.
All it could take is, you know, three made field goals, and we could. I mean, like I said, good chance of being 2-0. It's just, you know, it's annoying. So, got to get that fixed. Special teams is absolutely atrocious. Offense in this game, the offensive line did not impress me at all. A lot of pressure on Bowman and then on Cullumbie Magic.
Bowman, there's not a chance in hell he makes it through this game.
Well, because he's getting sacked at least. You know, the one advantage for Cullumbie was that he could at least scramble out of the pocket when he was getting pressure.
Our O-line wasn't going to protect Bowman at all.
This O-line also had a critical penalty late in this game that really was a backbreaker for us. A couple penalties late. And, you know, even though I will give him a little bit of credit, we had some good drives in the second half. Xavier White really got it going on the ground, and there were some good holes there. I'm not going to completely cast aside that those good drives they had, but overall in this game, there's way too much pressure on Cullumbie. And early on, our run game, you know, Sir Roderick Thompson can't get it going because they're just getting blitzed.
He's hitting the backfield almost every play.
They're getting blitzed and you know, getting pressure at the line of scrimmage. So that's a tough look.
Yeah, and let's talk about Yost for a second. This kind of reminds me of last year when Bowman went down. Yost just doesn't have the plays for Cullumbie to be effective and to win us games. He didn't play all that bad, but is he good enough to in this offense to score points consistently and win us ball games? After his brilliant drive in the fourth quarter to score TD to go up, the next three possessions we didn't score.
They're bad too, and I agree. I mean, Cullumbie had success throwing the ball in the middle of the field and, you know, quick hitters at times, screens. So what do we do on a 3rd and 5 instead of running, you know, those typical plays of throwing those slants over the middle and those, you know, quick hitters over the middle and then those screens? What does he do? He tries to throw one deep on 3rd and 5 where Cullumbie, that's not his strength. I mean, what kind of call is that? Well,
and in that play, he had a guy open on the left side of the field. I don't know if he was even looking at him or not.
Well, I mean, I just wouldn't put Cullumbie in that situation to begin with.
Yeah, no, I agree. Interesting on that, I'm actually going to somewhat disagree a little bit when we get into the positives because I think our coaching staff – adjusted, or they had good second half adjustments. The offense in the first half was just absolutely stagnant, 0 points, and that was a bad call. I thought Cullumbie came in and there were a couple, you know, there was a big fourth down play and a couple other ones where I thought he, you know, made good decisions there and was kind of set up well. But let's keep going through the negatives before we get to Iowa State. I know this is we got a long list of dirty laundry on you know, this game as far as things that we needed to correct. Do you guys, I mean, what else? I only have two things left.
Card has got to step up. He's played bad three games in a row.
77.
Calling him out, baby.
We'll step up or find someone that can do the job.
Especially at the tackle position. I think he's playing left tackle right now.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't like it.
You know, I don't like calling out, you know, players and stuff like that, but you got to step up and or find someone that can.
Accountability. You got to hold him accountable.
Yep. For me, one of my biggest negatives here, and I want you guys to chime in on this, is it feels like it's almost like whack-a-mole out there on our team right now. Like, one problem goes away.
Yeah, no.
Something else pops up. And we can't just play a clean game and an effective game all the way through.
We can't put together two halves.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, dude, very true.
Professor McGonagall's son, Tristan McGonagall, our buddies over at Talkin' Tech Podcast, he tweeted something during the game that stuck with me. It's exactly what you just said, and I couldn't agree more. We can't get these units to just play good at the same time. It's, you know,
right.
If our defense is up, our offense is down. Yeah. If our offense is up, our defense is struggling.
Our special team sucks the whole time.
Yeah, but no, you're absolutely right, Nick. A whack-a-mole is a great metaphor for that and visual because it is. It's like, okay, or, you know, it's like we put out one fire. What's that thing where he slaps it on the tank, the like
flex seal.
We slap one hole and another one breaks open. And it's it goes back and forth. So that's good. Really, I'll just say briefly, our run defense got beat up most of this game. We did not. What's his name? Deuce Vaughn.
We were so high on our linebackers, Vaughn. And where the hell were they in the run stop?
Deuce Vaughn ran, and really Trotter had a good game too. But Deuce Vaughn ran. He went lights out. You know, beast mode on us. Ran all over us in this game. That was not a good sign. And then my last thing was mental mistakes, man. Eric Monroe, we'll get to that. I kind of touched on it earlier. I mean, the missed tackle and just the lack of effort on that drive where we were up three. We needed to get a stop. We were up three. That's essentially the game, and that's what I'm talking about. You got to be able to have that winner's mentality at the end of a game. And he runs up and tries to swing around and floats by him. Thanks to guys going out of bounds.
Going out of bounds.
Dude runs – from, you know, being out at the 45 down to the 10-yard line, sets him up for a touchdown. That's lazy. I was going to call out Card as well. The hold on 4th and 3, just unnecessary. And he's a backbreaker.
He's also getting blown by majority of the game.
Yeah. And in that moment, that's the end of the – that's a huge play. That's basically the game's on the line. You blow it. Blocked punt was terrible. The interception late, like Lane and Nick were saying, on 3rd and 5, that's, you know, Yost, Colomby, I don't know whoever it was, that's a mental mistake we can't have. Missed field goals by Wolf. I'd understand if they were 50-plus, 45-plus. These are chip shots. They're give-me's. You got to make them.
One was a 35-yarder right down the middle.
Oh, he has the yips.
I'll even say Rico getting ejected, man. I mean, I don't think that hit was malicious or anything. I really do think he was pretty – it was bang-bang. It was pretty close. But you got to lift your head up, man. We need you. We need you in this game. These mental –
head up. Whoa.
There it is. These mental mistakes are just absolutely killer. And I'll just go my overall – for us to win games – later on, we got to do the little things right. We got to execute, and we just didn't do it in this game. That's enough. But that's enough. I can't take it negative anymore. I want to flip it around. Let's talk about some positives real quick. Xavier White blew up in the second half. I mean, he was a walk-on that then got put on scholarship.
He was also a receiver.
That's right. Moved to running back, a local boy. I mean, he's a Lubbock prodigy and ran the ball downhill and extremely hard for us in the second half. That was huge. What did you guys have for a positive attribute?
Yeah, right there. The running back room is looking good this season. Like you said, Xavier White stepping up, 113 yards on 12 touches, 9.4 yards a carry. Big time, buddy. Shows me if Sir Roderick has a bad game, we got somebody else in that running back room to step up. I think last game against Texas, Townsend had a pretty decent game. I still like our young freshman, Taj Brooks. He only had one carry this game. But our running backs are just – behind this offensive line, we touched on it. They're not doing very well on the offensive line, but our running backs are still producing.
They run hard.
They're coming out of the backfield and making receptions as well, and they're gaining yards on these little screen touches. I like them. I think it's a positive moving forward. I like to utilize them a little bit more and see what we can do with the run game.
Yeah, I like the running backs too. It makes it tough on them when they're having to dodge people in the backfield, but they're still getting it done. So
No doubt.
You there, hot takes guy.
I also, what do you have for a positive? I mean, Keyshawn Carter continues to be a big bright spot in just about every game.
Yeah, easy for sure.
I also think Colomby, I mean, coming in as a backup, played well in the second half. I'm putting that play call to throw it downfield on Yost just because he's going there the whole way.
Yeah.
I think that was from the headset. Yeah. You know, we're taking a shot here. Yeah. I wouldn't have put him in that position. But, I mean, I prefer Bowman still at this point. I'm not going to say there's a quarterback controversy. We'll get into that later.
I was about to say, that's our hot take of the day.
It's nice to know that if Bowman does go out, we have someone that can come in and kind of, you know, be steady and not be a, you know, terrible backup.
I'll go as far as say I think he's better than Jet Duffy as far as knowing the offense and being consistent in throwing.
From what we've seen, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's a good sign. If Alan Bowman goes down, like, you're right, I had this as one of my points. He came in and he did about as well as you could hope for a quarterback. I mean, damn, two of those drives, he threw some darts over the middle of the field.
And I don't know why we didn't do that on the third drive.
Yeah, well, we got down there and again, we just didn't capitalize. We made mental mistakes.
We didn't run those plays that he was capitalizing on.
I mean, we had that one bad third down, but to that point, that was a good drive leading into that. And then the interception was bad, but then we had another chance, and I mean, we can go over that over and over again when Card makes the hold. But I don't know. I thought he, you know, did well in this game. You know, made some throws over the middle. He had that one mistake that we can harp on. And I take back what I said about him in our offensive season preview, Nick. I forgot what was that one called? We're going to 60. He's coming with us.
Yeah.
We said, at least I said, I'm pretty sure specifically, that I don't want it to ever get to the point where we got to put in Colomby's a third string for a reason, blah, blah, blah. I apologize. I'll eat crow right now. I take it back. If Bowman goes out, you feel comfortable enough that we could still compete at a pretty good level with Colomby in there. That's a positive. I like the fact that he scrambled well. He could run the ball pretty effectively, and he made tough throws over the middle when he really needed to. So that's positive. And then again, I mean, you guys might not agree, but after rewatching it this morning, I really do think our coaches came out, and they did this against UT as well. And it's really unfortunate that, you know, we can't finish games and that we can't get it done down the stretch, because unlike last season, where I know I harped on this and we really grilled these guys for not being able to do it, I thought our coaching staff came out in the second half and early on made some pretty good adjustments. Our offense looked more in sync. you know, found some good tempo. We were able to march down the field, put together drives, score, you know, score the ball a lot better than the first half. And then our defense applied pressure and got stops as needed in pretty big moments, and then just couldn't come up with the big one. So it's, again, it's, you know, it's Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. They come out, they make good adjustments, and then they, you know, and then we blow it in the end, partly for coaching, partly player execution, whatever you want to call it. And again, I'll say it just like with the negatives, the overall, for us to win games like this that are close, we're going to have to learn how to do the little things right and execute across the board. Y'all have any last remarks on Kansas State game? Are we ready to put it behind us? Put the bad juju out?
Yeah, 0-2 in conference right now, 1-2 overall. You know, I hope Bowman's coming back. He's day-to-day right now, I read. Today is Monday. He's day-to-day. I'd rather have Bowman in there. We'll get into that in the hot take. I want Bowman back.
I need you.
I need him.
I miss you.
Don't take Allen out.
Yeah, we hope
Yost
isn't taking Allen out today.
Someone got that Friday Night Lights clip. Yost!
Remember the Titans?
He's taking Allen out. All right, well, with that being said, let's go ahead and talk about Iowa State, guys. They're going in. Do we know what they're ranked right now?
24 in the country.
Damn, only
as of Monday.
Well, I forgot they lost to Louisiana Monroe. So they're ranked 24. This is a game. The Big 12, I don't know. We don't have time to probably cover it on this episode. Just kind of a joke right now. I mean, it's a toss-up,
Our two top runners lost to Sunbelt teams.
Yeah, the three teams that are front runners in this conference, two of them lost to a Sunbelt team.
Oklahoma State
played, I think it was Tulane or something, pretty damn close. Yeah. So just a tough look for the Big 12. Iowa State, this is a good team, though. I will say this. And, God, I mean, it's so hard as a lifelong Tech fan because they used to be the doormat of the Big 12.
Right.
And now they've owned us for like 7 years.
And now some could say we're the doormat of the Big 12.
Exactly. And it's funny, too, because I always joke around about how they become one of my more hated fan bases. And honestly, it's because they remind me a lot of ourselves. They remind me of Tech fans because they're out in the middle of nowhere in Ames, Iowa. Everything Iowa State, it's like a religion to them. I mean, they worship it. They don't have, you know, like Lubbock doesn't have pro teams or anything like that. They don't have it either. So they worship the ground that everybody walks, you know, the players walk on Iowa State. And then now that they have found some success, they're kind of ruthless and they talk a lot of shit just like we do. So it pisses me off, but let's go ahead and talk a little bit about this team, man. Player personnel, Brock Purdy. Not the first time we're seeing him. He's a household name in the Big 12 now. What do y'all think about they claim Purdy magic?
Well, first, I want to say I think he was better last year, or at least he was playing better last year. This year, he's had a couple up and down games, but he's definitely got some weapons to throw the ball to, which we'll get into. That tight end's going to whoop us up and down the field like he did last year, I think.
You mean Megatron?
Yeah.
He's Optimus Prime out there. Okay, so Brock Purdy, yeah, you're
right. I think last year he was a little more solid.
He's kind of hard to read, honestly, because he's just very consistent. Or he's kind of consistent.
Inconsistent.
I would say he's as a floor general, say in basketball, and we always talk about that, or like a leader. He has a really bad play, and then he bounces back, and he's just consistent in keeping them around. But he's prone to mistakes, like you said. Nick, what do you got for the rest? I mean, any other personnel, man?
Yeah, I mean, this Iowa State team, they're an older team, 16 seniors, and Matt Campbell was praising them after the game against Oklahoma this last Saturday evening. He loves the senior class.
What a showboat.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, you think with an older team, discipline, the penalties are hurting them. It really kept Oklahoma, you know, around in the game. For what Matt Campbell said, he thinks they could have played way better against Oklahoma, but penalties are hurting them. He wants them to play a little more tighter and come out. He feels like they haven't reached their full potential yet. Hopefully, they've reached their full potential.
And yeah, we come a knocking in Ames. I will.
We got to catch them sleeping.
You know, Matt Campbell is a pretty good coach, and he's got Iowa State on the move.
Yeah, I like
Matt Campbell. Battle of the Mats. I think I might be taking Matt Campbell.
Well, they've improved so much under Matt Campbell, and I mean, we can joke around about fan bases and all that, but besides the point, I mean, Iowa State has improved a lot. I mean, they've gotten so competitive now that sometimes they do come into seasons overrated because they were, you know, they have gotten better. They won games, and like I said, frankly, they have. Just like, you know, we went through that stint with Oklahoma State where they were just beating us every year for a long time, and that now we've got two wins on them. Can this be the year we finally get over the hump?
We break out.
And I don't know if it'll happen. I'm not overly confident, but You know, they've kind of, you know, cleaned us out the last couple seasons. So Brock, but, you know, as we were saying, he's a scrambler. He can hurt you with his legs. That's always something to worry about. And also, I feel like he almost feels more comfortable when you force him out of the pocket and he has to do something on the move. That's when he goes and looks for, I mean, these, I'll list them off. He's got a plethora of weapons at the receiving position. Jace Allen will hurt you. Akins. And then Hutchinson had the big touchdown against Oklahoma in a good game. He likes finding those guys when it's, I think the announcers called it controlled chaos. When he's, you know, in the mix, you force him out of the pocket, he can really hurt you there. When you get, when you put pressure on him, you got to get home on Brock Purdy. You have to find a way to bring him down.
Which one of those guys was Megatron?
Okay, so that, I'm about to get into him. He's the, I think he's a tight end.
He's a tight end.
Yeah, he's a tight end.
And he's a beast.
He killed us.
Charlie Kolar?
Yeah, Charlie Kolar.
He
Megatron.
Kicked our ass up and down the field last year.
I mean, he's the dude, yeah, he was the biggest, you know, Achilles heel for our defense last, a terrible matchup for us last go around. I would almost say he is their impact player of the game because
he's their best offensive player.
He's just so, he's so tall. I mean, he's easy for Purdy to find amongst, you know, a secondary and your mid-level defenders. Watch him. I mean, he's a matchup nightmare. He got us. Watch him. He's a big physical presence with good hands. And then last but not least, and this is the thing, their offense is pretty solid from, you know, all the way around top to bottom. Breece Hall. He's a premier running back in the Big 12. You can put him up there with Chuba Hubbard.
Right.
You can put him up there with
Sir Roger Thompson.
Deuce Vaughn.
Xavier White.
Who's no, I'm thinking of Deuce Vaughn, and I feel like there's one guy we're missing. Anyways,
that we're putting Deuce Vaughn in that conversation as a true freshman says something.
That's scary.
He's gone off in his first two
but
Big 12
what's
games.
Also scary heading into this Iowa State game is how our run defense looked, and now we're going up against Breece Hall, premier Big 12 running back.
Exactly. But I will say, here's one silver lining. Silver linings playbook, man. You got to look Excelsior, win the day. Iowa State's O-line is suspect, dude. And that and Oklahoma, everybody wants a piece of OU right now because their defense is bad.
It's butt.
Their defense is butt, dude. They're trash.
44, I saw him make two blow-by tackles in that game.
He looked like a – if you could combine Justice Nelson
like
and,
a Mike Leach linebacker maybe from like the early days.
Who was our – oh, it, like toast – whenever you put Fry in his toast meat stage last year, if you could roll them all – like roll them into one, that's 44 for Oklahoma. He had two egregious blow-bys against Iowa State. Their O-line is suspect, dude. If you can get – if our defensive front, they should be able to get pressure on Brock Purdy pretty consistently. OU did it and got, you know, got to him. Here's the problem. When you do get there, you got to get home. You got to get your hands on him and bring him down because once he gets flushed out, he's going to hurt you. Let's talk about important matchups, man. I'll go with my first one. Alan Bowman versus this ISU secondary.
And hopefully it's Alan Bowman.
Let's hope so.
Hopefully.
But if it's not, from moving here forward, we're hoping it's going to be Alan. We're going to talk as if it's Alan Bowman.
On our hot take, we're going to go into it. We're doing two, kind of a split hot take today, and we'll talk about that there. But Alan Bowman, who we're assuming, and if it's not, if it's Columbia
versus secondary.
Then I hope it's, you know, say it applies either way. The ISU secondary can be beaten. They're not terrible, but this, if our O-line gives Bowman enough time to go through his reads, you're not going to hit him on the big play, but with our big, you know, primetime receivers like Ezukama, Vasher, Carter, these guys can make plays and score against this secondary. They can, if they can get open and they can gash this Iowa State defense. You know, Matt Campbell kind of runs the same thing. I mean, hell, Patterson might have got it from Matt Campbell. The bend don't break. They're going to sit back on you. So you're not going to hit them over the top for the, you know, the deep strikes, but you can throw that a 20 or 15 yard post or slant or those middle passes downfield are there, but you got to give Alan Bowman or Cullenby time. To me, the matchup to watch for on offense, our O-line has got to play better. We're challenging them. Can they play better? What's a big matchup for you guys?
If you look back to last year's game against Iowa State at home in the Jones, Breece Hall had 183 yards. If we don't stop him, we're going to lose again. And we only lost by 10 points last year. So we put up the numbers. I think Jed Duffy was in at that point, and we hung around. But
it was a close game. Yeah.
Breece Hall can't torch us like that. That being said, Jordan Brooks was our only player on defense last year. And in this game, Rico Jeffers only had three tackles against Iowa State last year. So Jordan Brooks was doing the whole run defense.
Right.
He was trying to stop himself out there. I think we're a bolstered, you know, front seven. Although our defensive line didn't have a great game last week against a good run attack in Kansas State, but we got to stop Breece Hall. And if we can do that, you know, I think we have a good chance of putting together a complete game, hopefully.
Yeah, I agree with Nick. I think to win this game, our defense is going to have to play absolutely lights out. They're going to have to create at least, for us to get a victory, they're going to have to create at a minimum of two turnovers.
Yeah, like that.
To win this game, we're going to have to, you know, stop Breece Hall, stop that tight end. The defense is going to have to play lights out for us to have a chance in this one.
It's going to, and really, that's not even like a blanket statement or a general overview. I mean, it goes that far, that deep. Our whole defense just has to play.
Our whole defense is going to have to play great.
I love it, man, because my second matchup was Kolar. I don't even know how you do it because he's just so damn big. And he's just a freak of nature out there. But our secondary and our you know, middle level of our defense, they're going to have to find some way to contain Kolar from making big third down stops. And then also our line, I mean, this kind of plays into what Lane said, our line's going to have to contain Purdy by applying pressure and keeping him in there. So I like those. Let's run – or Nick, you got one more?
Yeah, one other player to watch for. I just want to highlight this guy, Will McDonald. He had a big – they called it a half sack against Oklahoma late in the game last week. Will McDonald, their defensive end.
Old McDonald had a farm, huh?
Yeah. Old McDonald, watch out for him. If he's matched up with – what's his name? Cardi. It might be a long day for whoever's playing.
We are challenging Card, man.
And he's got to step up.
I mean, he's a big guy. He could beat all three of our asses, but we're still challenging him on the mics right now. You got to play. Well, really, our whole line's got to play better.
Right.
Dude. Yeah.
Keys to victory. Texas Tech has got to execute in the red zone, dude. Points are not going to be easy to come by. Begs the question, do we even attempt to kick a field goal with Trey Wolf, or do we just go for it on fourth down?
If it's 25 and above, I say no.
I say you give him one chance. If he misses again, we're going for it every time we're in the red zone.
What was that kicker that we pulled out of the stands?
Was that Hatfield?
No,
Matt Williams?
No,
that was Matt Williams, yeah.
We need a Matt Williams, guys. If you're a Texas Tech student and you like to kick footballs,
get ready.
Get to the Jones right now.
Yeah.
So we have to execute in the red zone. Like I said, we're going to need to, you know, when we get the opportunity, there might not be a lot of chances because I feel like Iowa State's a team that makes you grind it out. They make you earn everything you get, have to capitalize in the red zone. Also, got to get Brock Purdy off the field on third downs. When our defense battles and is able to hold them and contain them, I get it that they're going to, you know, drive and probably find a little bit of success. But for the most part, if we want to win this game, we got to get off the field on third downs.
For me, keys to victory is we just have to play a complete game. And if we win this game, we have to play perfect in my eyes because, you know, the Texas game, we fell off in the last 3 minutes of the game. We played a complete game up until 3 minutes left on the clock. Last week, the first half, forget about it. We're slow. You know, obviously Bowman went down, Rico Jeffers got ejected, but second half looked better. Second half,
Rico, no.
We're going to be missing Rico Jeffers for the first half in this game. Don't forget.
That hurts, man. Yeah. We do need Uncle Rico
back.
Yeah,
but we need to play a complete game, especially against Iowa State, because they always play hard the whole game, and they don't take plays off. So, you know, that's what we got to do to win.
For me, two big things. First, I already kind of touched on it. Going to have to speed Brock Purdy up and force him into a couple mistakes to where he might throw an interception. Strip sack, something like that. We're going to have to get him uncomfortable.
You always got to get TOs for an upset.
And, I mean, we're going to have a minimum of two, like I said, for sure. And the second one is we got to get the ball to Vasher more. I mean, he's a threat. I mean, if Bowman's in, we can throw it to him downfield. I mean, we got to utilize him more. I mean, how many receptions did you have last game? Two, three at the most?
Yeah, they targeted him. He had that one. It was unfortunate, man.
He only had a couple targets to me, and we got to utilize him more and get him the ball.
Get him going.
And let him get going, as well as Keyshawn and Eazy-E.
One problem we're having with not utilizing our receivers is, one, we have so many, we're deep in receiver, and we can spread the ball around. And two, Yost's offense isn't, you know, it's not going to highlight our best receivers. He likes to spread it around.
Right.
Screen passes, little bubble screens. He'll throw it deep to Vasher. I like to see Vasher go
over
like the middle.
I like to see Vasher, you know, just get a couple more targets.
Yeah, Bowman, if you're getting to the point now in your college career where you can start taking over games while, like, during play, you know, throw it to Vasher more. Like you said, target Vasher.
Absolutely.
Call it. I agree with everything you are saying. You know, this is kind of a rule of thumb. You had in a true upset, which I think these teams, you know, just like last year, this could be a 10-point game. They can compete. To get a win, you got to get turnovers, something we've said on here for a long time. And then, to me, we talked about it with Kansas State. You have to limit the mental mistakes, man. I mean, to really execute down in the fourth quarter when the game's on the line, it's the penalties. It's the lack of effort on a play, on a potential game-saving play on defense, you know, that we just said. We're, instead of going for a punch out, bringing them down, the little things, the little mental mistakes, you have to get rid of them.
You gotta be crisp.
You got to be crisp. All right, let's throw it around the horn real quick. Lane, what's your prediction?
I got two quick ones. If Bowman plays, I think it's going to be a 45-38 ball game in favor of Iowa State. If it's Colin B, I think the tempo's a little slower. It's going to be a 35-24 win for Iowa State.
Mine is somewhere in that ballpark. I just don't want to get my hopes up. And whenever I predicted us to lose against Texas, we did a hell of a lot better than when I predicted us to win. I truly think that, you know, we haven't seen it yet. I do believe that we can win this game. If we play at our highest level, will we do that? I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and chalk it up as I'll go 35-24. I'm really like seeing all the angles here.
I'll
do a 35-24 Iowa State.
I want to retract my 35-24, or what did I say, 34-24, I believe. I'm retracting our Texas Tech scoring 24 points because we shouldn't kick a field goal attempt, in my opinion. So I'm going to say 34-21 Iowa State.
Right you are. Nice.
What was mine again? I want to change it too.
I have no idea.
34-20.
Yours was 35-24.
35-24, Iowa State.
Look, guys, Matt Wells, there's a trend that we've seen, minus the Oklahoma game last year and the Texas game last year. Against good teams, we perform well and we play up to their – I like to think that we play up to their level. And we can hang around in the game. If we can play a complete game –
You're right.
I think we have a chance to win. We have a shot. When we play against, you know, poorer opponents or opponents that are really on our level on paper – we just play poorly.
Yeah. It's been a trend in Matt Wells.
Yeah, and I think this Iowa State team, their roster is better than ours. And I do think going into Ames, you know, it's going to be a tough environment. Even last week, you know, with the blackout against Oklahoma, they had a lot of fans in there and they were loud. And it's going to be like that this week. But I think we're going to play competitive football. I think we're going to pull a victory out. We're going to play a complete game. Matt Wells is going to surprise us.
He's going to win a close game for once.
He's going to surprise us.
He could do it.
Going into the bye week, it's going to be a defensive battle.
Yeah.
I really think it's going to be a defensive battle.
I was going to say the opposite. I think it could end up being somewhat of a shootout.
I mean, if Bowman plays, I have us at 45-38.
But when I say defensive battle, this is the Big 12.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So it's like still 30s or something.
Either like 28 to like 24. It'll be a close game. I think it's going to be a one-possession game.
Four-pointer or something.
Yeah, but I think we pull it out, guys.
All right.
I like where you're at, Nick, and I hope to God you are right. That's all we have for the, you know, main portion of this pod, our Iowa State look ahead to Iowa State and then also the Kansas State recap. We are ready now. We have a, you know, great hot take topic for y'all tonight. So,
and to the Iowa State fan that I tweeted on Twitter to listen to our episode, welcome to the Ramblin' Raiders podcast, baby.
Hey, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd say because two of the three of us picked y'all to win, you might want to go ahead and give us a 5-star as well.
Go ahead and give us that review.
No, but welcome. And we're ready for a showdown in Ames this weekend. Like I said, we're ready for our hot take segment now. We have a great topic to discuss tonight. But hey, that's just on this podcast, that's automatic.
Sometimes I had too many beers, which I gladly do and which I fully embrace. Automatic still is. I liked beer. I still like beer. Automatic. Still is. But I did not drink beer to the point of blacking out. When I was in town, I spent much of my time working out, lifting weights, too many beers. Automatic. Still is. Sometimes I had too many beers, which I gladly do and which I fully embrace. Working out, automatic. Blacking out, automatic. Catholic all-girls schools, automatic. Still is. We'll be right back.
You know what is automatic when you're watching a Texas Tech game is that the refs are going to call one of your guys for a targeting call and then miss three of them against the opposing team. We're going to break this hot take down into two different segments. The first one, let's just touch on it briefly. The targeting rule. I mean, what in that last game, Rico Jeffers needed to, or deserved to be ejected. After rewatching it, he lowered the crown of his helmet. I actually didn't know that that's all you had to do to get a targeting penalty. I thought that it had to be a head-to-head collision. I thought that you had to use the crown of your helmet, whatever, to go like have head-to-head contact. I didn't even realize that the rule was just lowering your head. By definition of that rule, yes, that was a...
He speared him.
He speared him. That was a bad hit. As far as it being like, you know, malicious or anything, I wouldn't say that.
He was just trying to make a big hit.
He was half a step late. I mean, his momentum was already going that way. If he would have lifted up his head, I really don't think it's that bad of a hit.
It should have just been a late. If he lifts his head up, it should have just been a late hit.
But then after that, so we see Rico Jeffers get kicked out of the game.
I have a quick question.
And it wasn't near as dirty. Let's keep in mind, and we didn't even talk about this yet, but Alan Bowman going down, that was a dirty ass hit.
Yeah, did that guy get ejected?
No. He just got a penalty.
What a joke. What a joke. That was malicious intent.
The hit on Alan Bowman, the dude is coming off the ground. The ball's already out of Bowman's hands, and he goes for his kneecaps.
Purposely.
That was bullshit, dude. I'm sorry. And then number seven, like we said, you know, you look like a real dumbass when you get up from a hit all jacked up, like jazzed up, and, you know, thinking you're hot shit, and your own player is down because you just basically took your own boy out on a play. I mean, that guy is a liability back there. He wasn't the only one. 31-0. All of Kansas State secondary, and look, I don't even care. We lost the game. I'm not blaming this on the refs because that's not something that we do on Ramblin' Raiders.
But they were dirty.
I'll say this. We're not going to blame the refs in a loss because we lost that game ourselves, but they sure as hell didn't help the situation. How do you go, guys? I'll ask this. I'm throwing this to y'all. You look at Rico Jeffers' play, you know, the scenario he was in, and then the refs, they review three of the same plays on Kansas State, and not one of them gets upheld. I mean, I don't even understand this rule. Like, what is the standard for a targeting and ejection?
It's zero consistency in this call, and it was all Saturday. The only way to get ejected is if you hit a quarterback. Apparently.
That's what we noticed earlier in the Iowa State Oklahoma game. Same shit happened to Iowa State, and it was. That hit was more clean than any of them in the Texas Tech Kansas game. His head was up, and they called it. I think you're right. If you hit the quarterback, that's out of bounds, a sensitive subject. You can't do it.
But I mean, the fact that they had three reviewed and none of them were called, when
not one.
Two of them were head to head. Clearly,
I mean, well, dude,
and the third one was for sure spearing. I mean, it was ridiculous.
No, that was pathetic. And I mean, from even the announcers, which typically aren't,
all three of them, they said, should have been ejected.
Yeah, the Texas Tech, you know, usually announcers aren't Texas Tech sympathizers. They all said that they need to take this game film back to the Ref Academy or wherever they
train. And K-State might be fined.
The Ref Academy or wherever they train, and they go through these procedures and talk about the rule book. He said that they need to take this film and say, what are you doing? Like, if you call this one, you got to call these because they're the same hit.
What happens in that scenario, too, is that if they take and they find the evidence conclusive enough, I mean, there'll be a fine issued, and we will actually receive money for that.
Oh, well, shit. Well, then, I mean, cha-chang, dude. Expect some cash coming our way.
It was conclusive. It was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, two head-to-head, clearly. Three, spearing.
And number seven, I mean, and we actually had a fan on Twitter, a K-State guy, which I'm glad he reached out. And, you know, we were talking some trash about him just being dirty, and he goes, look, he's a freshman. If it makes you feel any better, he's a freshman, just really excited to be out there. You know, and he kind of, I don't know if he was being sarcastic or what, I didn't really care, but, you know, saying, like, does that make you feel better? And I was like, yeah, actually it does, because at least now I know he's just young, you know. Yeah. He doesn't really know what he's doing, but holy shit, coaching staff, dude.
They need to get, you
Chris
know.
Kleiman, get on his ass. Y'all need to teach him up, because not only is he a liability for a receiver on the other team, the dude is going to break his own neck. He's going to end up in a hospital because every hit he comes in. And I love hard-hitting football. I'm all for it. Yeah. You want to come downhill and, you know, lay the wood and completely light up somebody, be my guest. But that dude, I mean, you could see it. Every time he ran in, he lowered at the last minute when contact was coming, he dropped his head.
That's, I mean, you better coach him up before he ends up in a wheelchair.
Well, yeah. Kansas State must like that kind of stuff because they just – extended Chris Kleiman's contract for 6 years, $23 million.
Well, after being Texas Tech, that might have been a little bit presumptive.
I mean, yeah, you beat a team that's looking at going 3-3 wins in the Big 12, maybe two. So
yeah,
I'd say you're getting a little bit, you're happy feet on that. You're getting a little ahead of yourself, putting the cart before the horse. So anyways, so we can all agree that the targeting consistency in the rules kind of a joke right now. There's just no level of consistency or standard to operate off of. So, I mean, we'll see what happens moving forward. But anyone watching that game, even as a K-State fan, I think you can be a little bit unbiased and say there was inconsistency there and that it was kind of a joke.
From what we saw in the entirety of college football Saturday, there was no consistency in the targeting call.
Yeah, well, at least two of his hits, number seven's hits, came when there was already a Kansas State player kind of holding our player up.
Dude, he smoked his own ball. Oh, yeah. And then, no, but the thing I loved about that guy was, like, on the hit that you're talking about, where the guy, his momentum was stopped. Another K-State player had him up in the air. He comes in flying and makes a hit while the guy is completely stationary and then just pops up like he's the shit.
He's a freshman.
He's that kind of defensive back that, you know, gets the quarterback makes a terrible throw and he's sitting there, you know, talking shit. Yeah. Like, he was in on the play. It's like that meme where it's absolutely nothing, and then it shows a corner just getting hyped, you know, out of their mind.
Yeah.
Like, dude, chill out and hit hard, but do it right before you break your neck.
For sure. But, hey, let's move on to the next, you know, half segment of this hot take, the quarterback discussion in Lubbock, and is there a quarterback battle? In my opinion, I think you bench Bowman and you bench Columbia and you bring McAvoyer in.
Oh, no.
My God, dude. And he's not even drinking tonight, man. Did you hit your head earlier or something?
No. In all seriousness, I'm kidding. I think this is a joke. The fans need to chill out. Columbia came in and played a decent game, but Bowman is still the guy. There's a reason he's the guy. And, I mean, he's better, in my opinion,
as of right now. I would say Bowman hasn't done anything to warrant being set down.
Exactly. Right, I mean, and Columbia hasn't won the job from him.
No. And Columbia, again, he had a good game, this whole thing. And it blew my mind. There was a – I forgot who put it up. There was a poll on Twitter, and it was 65-35 around there. People wanted Columbia and over Bowman.
No sense. Columbia came in and played a good game.
No, he did.
But he did not come in and win the starting job.
And don't get me wrong. If Bowman can't go, I feel okay with him in there. Like, right. I feel uncomfortable. But, again, also you got to think about it from this perspective is Bowman is the future of our program. I want this guy in games and taking reps. Columbia, I'm glad he's there. I know he came in as a grad transfer, as a senior. And that's awesome. You know, like, we're wishing the best for him. We want him to do well. But let's go ahead and put our eggs into the basket of, you know, the person who is going to be in this program for years to come.
Well, and let's not forget,
he's our
while
future.
Columbia came in and did, you know, we've touched on, did well, we lost the game. I mean, he did not win the job from Alan Bowman. You don't win a job while losing a game. It's just, that's just not a thing.
And if Bowman plays absolutely terrible and is just craters, then we can have the discussion.
Then we can start discussing if Columbia's the guy.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. You know, it's very easy for fans to see a backup quarterback come in and play decent and not just screw up and think that he's ready to take that starting job. No.
Exactly. Well put.
Alan Bowman, you know, for what experience he does have, he's in a way better spot to start this next game and future games.
He hasn't done anything to be set down.
Yeah, right than now. Columbia is. And, you know, like you said, he's the quarterback for at least another year.
He's the future.
Or at least two more years. And we need him to start these games. We need him to get the snaps in.
Get the offense down.
Can he stay healthy? I don't know.
I mean, but I think that was a cheap shot, that last hit. I mean, that was in other words, when Bowman got hurt, he kind of just got lit up and, you know, he broke down. That was a cheap shot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know we talk about, you know, yards aren't everything if you're not putting up touchdowns. But I think I saw a stat in the game, in the games that Bowman has played since starting his freshman year in 2018, he's leading in active quarterbacks in yards per game.
Yeah, I think I did see that stat as well. And again,
you don't bench him.
I just don't understand the whole bench Bowman. I mean,
yes, he throws picks, but he's putting up numbers.
We were also up 15 points against UT last week with 3 minutes to go, and he didn't lose that game. No, I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, to sit Bowman down after Columbia playing a decent game is just absurd.
Yeah, all right. That was automatic You heard it here first. Don't sit Bowman down. He is the future. We're going to be just fine with him in there. And targeting, what is it? We don't know.
Can we get consistency?
Because
if you hit a quarterback, automatic.
Yeah, if you spear a quarterback, automatic. If you decapitate a receiver, you're probably in the clear.
Fine.
You should be in the clear, and you'll be okay. You know, it's just it's topsy turvy and just no consistency. Hey, at least they're letting the players come back on the sidelines and like stay with the team.
I do like that.
Also, I'd love to see us get to a point where it takes two of those calls to get ejected, because some of the times these guys are just making a hard play and it's an accident. An automatic ejection seems a little bit over the top.
That's what it was, I think, a year ago or 2 years ago.
It needs to go back to that, because the other way, it's
detrimental to a team.
Well, it's just a little over dramatic of a consequence for a play like that. If you're truly, unless it's malicious, then you can maybe, like basketball does, flagrant one, flagrant two, you can rule it like that.
Right.
But if it's an accident, let's give these guys another chance. And let them play, dude. I mean, it's, you know. And right now, I mean, shit, they don't even care.
Except if you're that, you know, K-State D lineman, he should have been ejected.
Yeah, that was pathetic. All of that to be said, we're ready to move on to a positive note and our concluding segment. Y'all know what it is. It's our Matador Motivational. Today's theme for the Matador Motivational is do something hard in your life. You know, do something hard. Attempt something hard. This comes from Dan Crenshaw and his new book, Fortitude, which one of my good buddies who lives over in Baton Rouge, Garrett Ward, sent it to me, and I've been trying to crack through these Harry Trotter books. Man, I'm almost done with Harry Trotter 7. But once I'm done, I'm gonna read Dan Crenshaw's book, because I've heard it's really good. And I was listening to him on the Joe Rogan podcast when he was promoting this new book that came out, and both of them, you know, Republican and Joe Rogan's kind of a self-proclaimed leftist and Democrat, but they both agreed on the importance of challenging oneself and being tested outside of your comfort zone.
Hey, Jackson, do something hard, man. Finish the Harry Potter books so you can move on to Dan Crenshaw.
Boy.
Wow, I was going to make that joke as well. The Harry Potter books are a challenging thing in themselves.
I was going to say, those Harry Potter books are no joke, and I have been trying to get it done. It's coming soon, man. We're like two horcruxes down. The rest are just right in sight. It'll be over before I know it. And I'll just be in an emotional free fall, man. Like
an emotional wreck.
It'll be a bittersweet finish whenever I'm finally done with book 7. But in Dan Crenshaw's book, Fortitude, he has a chapter, I think it's titled Do Something Hard. He was talking about it, on Joe Rogan's podcast. I thought it was an interesting sort of message that he had in this ideology of being able to challenge yourself and the importance of putting yourself in a difficult situation to get outside your comfort zone. Because really, if you think about it, how can we sharpen ourselves? How can we improve ourselves and be better than we are if we don't test, if we're never uncomfortable, if we're never forced and challenged in a way that makes us improve, that makes us who we are and gives us the opportunity to exceed expectations if we're not in that situation? And the dilemma he used was with parents. He goes, Dan Crenshaw, that was Dan Crenshaw's bit on doing something hard in your life. Joe Rogan says that for parents, you know, he goes, some of the most successful people I know got to where they are because they had childhoods that were difficult, where they had a lot of obstacles that they had to overcome and, you know, challenges that were presented to them and turned them into the hard-nosed, you know, good person with good quality, moral character, everything. The success story that they are. And then as a parent, turned around, now they're parents of children that they don't want their kids to have to go through those same hardships, because you want to protect your children. But at the same time, that's what helped them become who they were. You know, that's what helped them reach their goals and ambitions and strive and become something more than they could ever dream of. So it's kind of like, you know, how, as a parent, how much do you allow your kids to fail and then also protect them at the same time? Because in life, it is important to try to do something hard, to go out and put yourself in a difficult situation.
Take a chance. Sometimes you just got to take a chance on something difficult, you know, and it might not pay off that first time, you know, you really get yourself out there. But, you know, if you keep going at it, you keep taking chances, you know, you're going to hit something, and it's going to be a big momentum change for your life.
Matt Wells, you could say.
Yeah, hopefully he hits one. Hopefully he hits one fairly soon.
We need him to hit one out of the park. Nick, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm just reading a quote here from him on that chapter, actually. He says, I just want you to come away with concrete lessons you can implement in your daily life, but also deeper philosophical lessons. And, you know, he's saying each chapter is a lesson and a way of thinking about hardship. You're going to face hardship in your life. Life isn't going to be just roses and fairy dust and happiness all the time. So,
and you don't want it to be. I think, you want to be challenged.
Yeah, if you go your whole life without facing any kind of hardship, you know, that's not a life, honestly, well-lived. Yeah.
Nope.
Because
without
you
true adversity.
Yourself, you haven't done anything in your life to push your boundaries, to just overcome and, you know, you could have had a better life if you went through something hard.
Without adversity, I mean, how can you truly find a way, you know, how can you know your limits and know how to excel and you know, reach points that you didn't know were possible? And without a challenge, you can't do it.
And know what to do when your back's up against the wall.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, you learn once you've been in that situation, you learn how to adapt and come out of it.
So just remember, guys, you know, again, this Matador Motivational, everyone, a lot of people have been having a difficult year, whether it's financially, physically, mentally. I mean, whatever it is that you're facing right now that, you know, we've harped on this a couple times throughout this year on the podcast. Remember that it's these moments that you know, don't make or break you, but can help define you later on down the road, that can help build you into the success story that you want to be. And that one day you look back and say, without that adversity, without those challenges and that just really hard, you know, that really difficult environment I found myself in, I wouldn't be the person who I am today. You know, for all the men and women out there that are just struggling and trying to get to where they are, push through. Keep your head down. Unlike number 7 on Kansas State, you know, he needs to keep his head up. Y'all keep your head down and keep grinding, keep working, and get to a point where, you know, you turn around and say, you know, I was able to persevere because I was challenged.
All right. I like it.
So as we approach, you know, this weekend, the 10th, we're playing Iowa State in Ames. Remember that. We're hoping to finally get a win, you know, a much-needed win for Matt Wells and to get this season turned around. We hope you all have enjoyed this episode 62. Remember to go follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Also go to RamblinRaiders.com. Check out our merchandise line. You definitely want to look at the Hot Takes with Laney Cakes line. Get you a shirt. Our hoodies are sick. Personally, I like the gray ones. I just ordered one, and I think they're the best one we have in our wheelhouse. So check out that merchandise and, you know, get ready to have a good week before the bye week. Boys, any advice?
Yeah, guns up. Go get those shirts. They got a great picture on the back.
Try something hard.
And then also try, you know, beer and alcohol, whatever you got to do to get through the tough times. Nick, Lane, as always,
we out.